නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස. Hello, this is Lal from PureDhamma.net. I started this subsection titled New Approach to Meditation a couple of weeks ago. It is a subsection in the meditation section. Now, I have published two web pages on this topic, but just in the past few days, I realized that this point of view or this new approach has more benefits than I previously realized. It is difficult to describe that in even a few web pages, so I thought of trying this audio format. This whole thing started when I received several emails from person X. She has been doing conventional metta bhavana or loving kindness meditation on and off for many years. I guess it's okay to say it is a she. It's hard to avoid that to come out when I speak. So she has not explicitly told me what she actually recites when she does the bhavana, but just said that it is anarya metta bhavana. So it must be something like may all beings be happy and healthy, or something to that effect. But she's pretty much engaged in it, not just reciting the words. So what happens is that when she consistently does this meditation for a few weeks, she starts feeling better overall. Her anxieties go away and she has a calm and peaceful state of mind. Not just during the sessions, but for days and weeks as long as she's keeping up with the meditation sessions. But the problem, according to her, is that she starts to lose interest in her old favorite activities such as reading novels or listening to music. Now, if she stops meditation for a week or two, then she gets back that ability to enjoy her old activities like reading books or listening to music. But now her peace of mind is gone. And she's back to her agitated mindset. So, as I explained in the previous two posts, this is due to the different characteristics associated with sense pleasures or āmiṣa sukha, and on the other hand, the relief that one gains when one stays away from too many sense pleasures, which is called niramisa sukha. I will talk about the difference between the two in a moment, but let me first point out the new aspect of it that I recently thought about. Now, also, maybe even before that, such a relief is seen when one starts staying away from more extreme sense pleasures. That's what normally happens. But for example, we all have experienced agitated state of mind when we have lust or sexual thoughts take over. One's mind gets really excited and one could lose all sense of decency in extreme cases. For example, like when sexual misconduct happens, that's what happens. The mind becomes even more agitated when we get mad or angry with someone. Even though becoming angry is not really a sense pleasure, it has root causes in sense pleasure because we get angry when something prevents us from getting to such sense pleasures. So we all can remember instances where our minds got agitated and uncomfortable due to extreme repulsions or extreme attractions. In other words, lobha or dosa. The closest English words are, I guess, greed or cravings for labor and hate or revulsion for those. And it is not as clear, but when we act with ignorance or moha, our minds get agitated too. The agitation of the mind is amplified when we start doing immoral things due to greed, hate, and ignorance. For example, if we get attracted to something and if we steal that, so that becomes even immoral. It's not just a sense pleasure anymore. And then the agitation becomes even more. So this is why I am really glad that X shared her experience with us. Her experience clearly shows that our minds are agitated even while engaged in harmless sense enjoyments. Reading novels or listening to music are not extreme sense pleasures and definitely not immoral. However, staying away from them made a difference to X's mindset. In her case, she did that even without realizing it. I mean, she stayed away from those sense pleasures even without realizing it while she was engaged in the meditation activity. So I am quite sure that X is not engaged in any immoral behavior or even activities like lying, stealing, harsh speech, etc. If she did, she would not have experienced this shift with meditation in such a short time, like a week or two. This is why, in the first few posts in the main meditation section, specifically the posts numbered 1 through 3, I talk about the necessity to staying away from the 8 kind of extreme activities, which I call the Big Eight. So we are assuming that X is pretty much staying out of those Big Eight activities. This is why it is easy for her to experience the Niramisa Sukha of meditation, even Anarya meditation. Not only that, this Niramisa Sukha makes her mind to be not attracted to sense pleasures. See, they are two sides. You can have either this or that. So the first lesson from the experience of X is that one needs to be forcefully abstain from only those activities that are harmful to others, such as those Big Eight that I talked about in those three posts. I mean, but violations, of course, can happen once in a while. And nobody can stay away from those until getting to the Arahant stage. But when one leaves a normal moral life, one can stay away from Big Eight for most of the time. And it is only then that a meditation program can become effective. This is an important point to remember. So therefore, if a person with that type of, moral living style starts on a meditation program, then that person can definitely start experience this Niramisa Sukha relatively easily. This point is proven by X, because she didn't forcefully stay away from normal sense pleasures like reading novels or listening to music, but the meditation program made her voluntarily stay away from those because she started liking the experience of Niramisa Sukha. So we will come back to this issue of being upset about losing, but she's caught up in this dilemma where she has to choose between the Niramisa Sukha of meditation and the Amisa Sukha of sense pleasures. But let us first discuss the possible implications of this Niramisa Sukha from an entirely different point of view. This is what I thought about during the past few days. So there are many people who like many aspects of Buddha Dhamma or Buddhism, but have a hard time believing in the concept of rebirth. Now, rebirth is such a basic and fundamental concept in Buddha Dhamma, so they face a difficulty right at the beginning. Now, it is true that Buddha Dhamma provides a solution to the larger aspect of suffering associated with the rebirth process. I mean, possible bad kinds of suffering in future rebirths. But in addition to that, the Buddha also talked about a suffering that we feel in this very life. And that suffering we all go through without even knowing or being aware of it. My point is that this is where one should really start. Even for those who do believe in the rebirth process out of faith in the Buddha, it is easier to start working on the second type of suffering, because we all can experience it if we know how to find it. So there's also a related story in the Tipitaka. Even though I have not been able to remember which sutta it is. So one day a Brahmin comes to the Buddha and says, you teach that there are many other realms of existence other than the ones we can see, like the human realm and the animal realm. So can you explain to me what life is like in the Deva worlds? So the Buddha told him, your mind is not capable of comprehending that. One's mind needs to be cleansed to a certain extent in order to be able to grasp such concepts, because those cannot be experienced in this human world. So the point is that if one really wants to comprehend the answer to that question, one needs to develop supernormal powers or abhinya powers and experience by themselves. Trying to explain what life is like in the Deva realms to someone who has no data or any tangible information about that realm is like trying to explain to a fish what life is like outside water. So the Buddha advised the Brahmin, or that person, to start off with concepts that he is familiar with. He asked the person whether he can feel the agitation of the mind when he has blinding lust or raging anger. Of course, I can remember such instances, the person replied. Could he feel such agitation when he is in meditation? No, I feel calm and peaceful when doing meditation, the person replied. So the Buddha said, one can make that calmer feeling long-lasting by doing more of meditation and by avoiding instances of greed and hate. That is the basic point, keeping the mind occupied with good thoughts while keeping bad thoughts out. That leads to a release from the incessant distress of the mind, leading to Niramisa Sukha. Then one can go beyond that and make it permanent later. So the key point is that one should start at a point that one can relate to. First, one needs to experience this cooling down in English, Niramisa Sukha in Pali, or Nivima in Sinhala, that results from staying away from greed and hate. That is the very first release from suffering that the Buddha taught. So before one can think about this samsaric suffering or the suffering associated with the rebirth process, it is easier to comprehend the other aspect of suffering that the Buddha described. Then one can first suppress that suffering and then get rid of it. So this aspect of hidden suffering, we can not only realize that it exists, but we can also get rid of it, at least temporarily. So I myself had not thought about this approach up until now, but so that's what I want to discuss next before going back to the difficulty faced by this person X that we talked about in the previous two posts. Let me first point out that the importance of focusing on the suffering due to greed and hate is what is explained in the Upanisha Sutta as well. I hope to have a separate post on that Upanisha Sutta, but the main idea is the following. In that sutta, the Buddha says that faith in Buddha Dhamma comes from understanding suffering. So that's a key point. One has to really comprehend suffering, this hidden suffering that Buddha talked about, before one can build true faith. Now, one cannot experience this suffering or at least get an idea about suffering in the rebirth process or in the apaya, so the four lowest realms. We cannot visualize that, but we can experience the first type of hidden suffering, and also we can verify that it can be removed or at least temporarily suppressed. That experience is the one that leads to true faith first in Buddha Dhamma. So the true faith in Buddha Dhamma has its foundation in this Niramisa Sukha, and it is very strong. It is based on one's own experience and can eventually lead to Nibbana. It is a somewhat long discussion, but the point is that one needs to get started by realizing that there is relief to at least one kind of suffering that we all can experience right now in this life, and then build on that to see the bigger suffering associated with the rebirth process later. Therefore, at the beginning, one does not need to worry about whether this rebirth process is a valid concept or not. We can all start on the path by understanding the first type of suffering, experience the relief from that suffering, and then see what happens later. So I have discussed this first type of suffering in a couple of posts already at the site some time back. And one is the incessant distress or pelima, key to dukkha saccha. And the other one is need to experience suffering in order to understand it. So I have given links to those in this post. So this is a suffering that we all experience most of the time, but it's hidden from us. One can only see it when one's mind becomes at least temporarily removed from that suffering, like when X experienced the relief when she actively engaged in the meditation program. So this hidden suffering is nothing but the constant agitation of our mind and the ever-present nagging feeling asking for more and more sense pleasures. These sense pleasures or amisa sukha have the following two key characteristics. One is that They are highly enjoyable. There's no doubt about it. But do not last very long, and one gets tired of it, of a given activity very soon, very quickly. And then, but there is this second characteristic. When we get tired of one kind of sense pleasure, there are others that we get attracted to. So the mind wants to move from one type of sense pleasure to another. When it gets tired of one, it just moves on to the next. So there is no stopping. This is why the mind is agitated all the time. So there is no escape from this incessant agitation or incessant distress or pellima. Even though we get tired of one, we are immediately drawn to another. This is something one really needs to contemplate on. Imagine that you are eating your favorite food. Soon you will have had enough, and if you eat another bite, you might even throw up. So you go lie down, and then it feels good lying on a comfortable sofa. But that doesn't last either. You get restless and then think about going to have a chat with a friend or go to a movie or something like that. You just move from one activity to another. And then later, maybe next day, you also get that urge to taste that delicious food once again. So it just goes around and around, it never stops. And we are not even aware of this until you stop and take a break and realize the relief from that. That is what happened to this person X that we talked about. So the Niramisa Sukha arises when that first type of suffering or this incessant agitation of the mind is suppressed for a longer period of time, like a day or two. The keyword here is suppression, because it is temporary, unless you get to the next stage, which we will talk about later. But it stays when this Niramisa Sukha is staying with X as long as she keeps up with the meditation program. Now, if she goes back to the sense pleasures that she enjoys forcefully, because she has to do that forcefully, then this Niramisa Sukha goes away. In other words, that suffering comes back in the form of mental agitation. Now, you need to realize that this suffering is not like an ache or a pain associated with an injury or a headache. That is why we don't even feel it most of the time. But it is always there. Most times it is masked until we reveal it by following the procedure that X followed. That is, by living a moral life, and also by engaging in a regular meditation program or some way to keep the mind away from sense pleasures for a sustained period of time, like a week or two at least. Another point is that there may be some who have not even experienced this Niramisa Sukha, even if they engage in regular meditation activities. That could be because they do not sustain the cooling down outside the meditation program. For example, if one is engaged in things like lying, gossiping, slandering, etc., the big eight that I talked about earlier. So in such cases, a regular meditation program may not work, because the agitation of the mind is too high. Now, X seems to be a person who has avoided the big eight most of the time in her life. That is why it is easy for her to access this Niramisa Sukha in a brief time, like in a week or two. Once she does the meditation program for a week or two, then it comes back. The Buddha explained that this ever-present suffering or the agitation of the mind is due to the five hindrances or pancha nivarana that cover our minds. To distinguish that from other kinds of suffering that we feel, let us call it incessant distress or pelima in Sinhala. That is what I referred to in these earlier web posts. If you think about it, that is exactly what it is. It is an ever-present agitation of the mind, even though it is masked most of the time by our perceived sense pressures. More importantly, it is 100% associated with the mind, and it is possible to be removed. That is the key point. So what are the other types of suffering that we experience? Those are aches and pains associated with the physical body, like headaches or injuries. There are also pains due to diseases like cancer or heart problems and things like that. Now, these are what the Buddha called suffering due to previous karma or karma vipaka. They have their causes in the past. It is hard to avoid them now. We cannot really remove those types of suffering completely, but in many cases, we can live our lives to minimize them, and also we can take medicines to alleviate that suffering. Meditation can also help with that kind of suffering, but it cannot eliminate them. So this is an entirely different topic, but the point to remember it is that these kinds of physical suffering are the results of our past actions. But most people think that those types of physical suffering as the suffering pointed out by the Buddha in the First Noble Truth. But that is not true. A Buddha is not needed to point out the existence of that kind of suffering. Any person can figure that out. So the point here is that there are two kinds of sufferings that were revealed to the world by the Buddha. One is the incessant distress that we experience in this life. The second is the suffering associated with future rebirths, especially in the four lowest realms or the apayas. Now, the Buddha not only identified these two types of hidden suffering, but also illustrated how they arise, what causes them, and how to remove these causes, thereby stopping them from arising. This is the uniqueness of Buddha Dhamma. So, we should initially focus on the first type of suffering. Identify and feel the sukha, niramisa sukha, that arises when it is suppressed. It is very clear from the person X that one can at least suppress this incessant distress by living a moral life and by engaging in an even anarya meditation program. The key point is to occupy the mind with non-greedy and non-hateful thoughts for long periods of time. Now, here's the next critical step. In order to make that change permanent, to keep that niramisa sukha from fading away or have the urge to give up voluntarily as X feels right now, one needs to take another step and comprehend anicca, dukkha, anatta, the three characteristics of this world. This permanent solution is available only in Buddha Dhamma for getting rid of these, even the first kind of suffering, the incessant distress. So the key to realize is that this incessant distress is due to thoughts of greed, hate, and ignorance. Furthermore, they arise due to mental impurities, or in Pali they are called kilesa, or in Sinhala it is called keles, that we all have. In the next post, I will discuss them and point out how we can even quantify those mental impurities and how we can remove them in stages, step by step. But what I want to again emphasize here is that this is really a step by step process. First, one needs to live a moral life by staying away from the basic the dasa akusala and at least the big eight that I talked about. Then one needs to try to keep the pancha nivarana, or those five hindrances, from arising frequently. So please read the post on the five hindrances or the pancha nivarana. One does not even have to do formal meditation sessions. The Buddha recommended just to live one's life with satipatthana, which basically means stop doing, speaking, or thinking about immoral things as much as possible, and also gradually avoid extreme sense pleasures. Definitely avoid doing immoral things. And one also needs to speak, think about moral things, and do moral things. This is also called anapana. Ana means taking in good things, and pana means giving up bad things or immoral things. So anapana and satipatthana can be cultivated either in formal sitting down meditation sessions, or one can live that life. So the key point is to practice them during all day as much as possible. If one just does formal meditation but then goes about, you know, engaging in activities such as lying, gossiping, etc., that burdens the mind, then that will not work. So when one does this correctly for a while, one will start feeling the Niramisa Sukha, just like X did. When one gets to this stage of experience Niramisa Sukha, it will be much easier to grasp deep concepts like Anicca, Dukkha, Anatta. Now, unfortunately, X has not even tried to comprehend Anicca, Dukkha, Anatta. Until she does that, she will always have this going back and forth between sense pleasures and Niramisa Sukha. When one starts comprehending Anicca, nature of this world, one will start losing the urge to go back to sense pleasures. Because at that stage, the mind does not value sense pleasures as much as it used to. This is the key point. That is why if X did this contemplation on Anicca, Dukkha, Anatta, she may be able to comprehend it. And then she will lose the things that she values so much, like reading novels or listening to music even. She would not worry anymore about losing those sense pleasures. This is the key to the Sotapanna stage. So I must also point out that above discussion is 100% compatible with everything at the website, even though I have not specifically talked about it before. For example, the post I have on Buddha Dhamma in a chart specifically says exactly the same thing. that discussion associated with that chart shows how someone like X can follow the mundane eightfold path, or even you know, any moral behavior, and reach Niramisa Sukha. At that stage, one can comprehend the anicca nature and start on the noble eightfold path. So I hope this above discussion makes it easier to understand that critical transition to the noble eightfold path. I will talk about this in detail in a couple of weeks. Before that, next weekend, I will publish the post on the kilesa, or the mental impurities, that will help us quantify these ideas in that upcoming discussion. May you all experience the Niramisa Sukha and comprehend the anicca nature of this world. May the blessings of the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha be with you in your efforts.